Our next case is Stone v. Services. Mr. Gage.
Thank you, Your Honor. Richard Gage, representing Amelia Stone. Your Honors, we start in this case with the undisputed proposition that petitioner proved the prima facie case. And I want to run through that very quickly. I know you're all familiar with the vaccine program, but I want to run through what that really means because I think it frames where we're going today. We proved all three steps of Alfin. The vaccine, in this case DTaP, could cause the seizures that are the injury that complained of. We proved step three of Alfin, which was that the injury occurred in the appropriate time frame, in this case 14 hours after the vaccination. And we proved step two, that there was a logical sequence of cause and effect, that the vaccine in fact did cause injury in this case. Okay. To put that proof to the court, my argument, petitioner's argument, was the same.
And then the government proved an alternative cause which overrides it all.
No.
Well, here's the problem. The SCN1A mutation is in every cell of the body of this sweet child. How can the vaccine have entered every cell of her body and have changed the DNA in every cell of her body?
And the court, with that question, presumes that it's my burden to show such a thing?
No, the problem you have is that the government has shown this, and it has been upheld by two fact finders, the special master and the trial judge, that every cell in her body is mutated, and that mutated is the mutation is the cause of the SMEI. So that's your problem, isn't it?
Yeah, well, no. The problem...
The vaccine, now, because of this, of course, because this mutation was present when the vaccine was added, raising her temperature, it did trigger a seizure. We understand that.
It triggered the initial seizure of the seizure disorder.
Yeah, well,
absolutely.
And that's
conceded.
But the cause is... that mutation. How do we get around that? Is there any way for us to deal with the fact that every cell in her body contains this abnormality, which is associated by at a 90% rate with SMEI by the medical community?
What we need here in this case, and in fact the vaccine program, I mean this is in my mind a new area that this court needs to define in the vaccine program. We do not have well-defined standards for dealing with what respondents' burden is when dealing with the factors unrelated defense. I mean, that's really what we're here today for. But let's use Special Master Abel's example. Okay. Every leaf in that forest is absolutely tinder dry. And that campfire did not go around and infect every leaf. It didn't start the fire. The little old lady sitting at the stop sign, she has osteoporosis. She's got it in every one of her bones. The guy who rear-ends her with a 5-mile-an-hour accident that you or I would just get out and maybe swear at the guy.
Yeah, type cases.
Absolutely. The question, the real question for this court, and I mean, obviously I was planning on getting there, Your Honor, before I got to the end of my time, is there's only one judge so far it's a special master, that has applied the restatement second rules to this question. I mean, clearly there is a propensity. We don't deny that. We think that she had a very thin eggshell skull.
Is it a propensity or a cause?
Well, then therein lies the rub. The question before this court is, what is the question that was never answered below, even though we raised it, it was never answered below, was what is the legal cause? What does that term mean in this context? That's what the question is.
If it's clear that the secretary had the burden of proving by a preponderance of the evidence that this, namely the abnormality in the gene structure, was the cause. That's what the case is saying.
And
the special master found, and the Court of Federal Claims affirmed the finding, that that burden of preponderance of the evidence had been met.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why we're here, correct? Okay, the question is, I really want to frame this because it makes a difference. Okay, we proved, and the special master accepted. And this is like between a rock and a hard spot legally. These are inconsistent. You can't do it this way. We proved the case we put on was the MERS Bergen-Simon doctrine, or idea in the vaccine program, by having this severe of seizures. This wasn't just a little 5-minute seizure, no temperature, or something like that. These were two severe status febrile seizures at the time of the vaccination. Okay? Everybody admits that those were caused by the vaccine. We proved, now the government obviously did admit this, but the special master accepted our proof that under the MERS Bergen-Simon idea, the doctrine, it's been, you know, other cases have held this also, that injury lowers a person's seizure threshold. It makes subsequent seizures more likely. Okay? So there is a neurologic injury, seizures, lowers the seizure threshold, future seizures are more likely in that situation. That was our proof. That's what he accepted. And under our proof, petitioner's prima facie case, we could not prove a prima facie case without proving everything in subsection 11C of the statute. That sets forth the things that we have to prove. One of them is that the injury has to last for at least 6 months. So, we have a proven prima facie case with a seizure injury, lowering seizure threshold, making future seizures more likely, that lasts for at least 6 months. That's our case.
Where does the special master make the finding that this lowered the threshold?
MERS Bergen-Simon. He cites himself in MERS Bergen-Simon. I mean,
in this particular case.
He does in this case.
Okay, where is
the first, Curtis, would you look it up? I think it's page 40. In the first decision.
The April 15, 2010 decision?
Right, and I cited in my brief to you, I can look it up. But he specifically references his holdings at MERS Bergen-Simon. He specifically references his holding in MERS Bergen-Simon, saying, and here's the scientific language, he actually cites the doctor.
Where is it in the opinion?
It's in my brief. Page 20 of my brief, the joint appendix, page 49, he's citing Dr. Holmes, and when this type of injury occurs, and a person goes on to have seizures, the injury, this neurologic injury, is seen as the antecedent of the sequela. The sequela are the subsequent seizures. The antecedent of those subsequent seizures is the initial neurologic injury. Okay? That was my case. That's what I presented. That's what he accepted.
He distinguishes those two cases.
He's saying that isn't this case, as I read his opinion.
At page 49, he says, in the absence of proof of alternative causes,
And then he goes on to say these Merzberg and Simon can be readily distinguished from the instant case, as those cases contain none of the SC1A gene mutation evidence and testimony that was presented in this matter.
Right.
So we've seen they're different cases.
This was the second part of his analysis. If what you're saying is right, then we didn't prove our table case, is what you're saying. Everybody admits we proved our table case. I mean, the reason the burden shifted to the government was because we proved our table case. Okay? I mean, the table, cause and fact case, excuse me. The respondent has never argued that we didn't prove our cause and fact case. Respondent has never argued that the burden didn't shift to them. That's not what we're doing here. The question we have here is, what is the burden? What is their burden when the burden shifts to them? That's the question that's before this court. We presented the Merzberg and Simon case for our cause and fact case. Now, what he's doing here is he's gone back after accepting our cause and fact case, which was Merzberg and Simon, and saying, in this case, I'm going to distinguish it because, and then he launches into his legal analysis of what their burden should be.
But he says that there was evidence. He says, while respondent contested with Simon and Merzberg, etc., there was no evidence presented that the children in those cases possessed the SC1A gene mutation. Mm-hmm. Here, he says there was the evidence.
Mm-hmm. And you realize this particular decision was overturned because the standard he was applying to the government's case was wrong.
Right, but then he went back and he said he fixed that, and he said the evidence is here.
Okay, so what burden did he use to apply to the government's case?
But didn't he also say that there was no brain injury here?
He says he applied preponderance.
Right. He uses the word preponderance. Right.
Isn't that the right standard?
The preponderance is a standard we use. Sure. So, absolutely.
So what's the error unless it's up to simply have made an error of fact?
Because he did not. We're shifting back to, I guess the question is, what was the error that was found by the claims court? I mean, this case was remanded because of the wrong legal standard.
I thought you had said just a moment ago that he applied the wrong standard.
Right.
So, but he ultimately applied the preponderance standard in his last opinion, right?
Sure.
Now,
that's the evidence. I'm talking about the legal standard.
That's the legal standard.
No, that's the standard for, well, you call it legal standard, but that's the standard for proof of evidence. The question is, the legal question before this court is, what can you, as a matter of law, what facts can you defend with as a matter of law? I mean, the fact is, Special Master Abel is the only one of the special masters who've dealt with this.
I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're citing is the problem.
Well, let me just say it then. Let me just go to the restatement second and fourth applies to this program. This court has applied it. Specifically in relation to the issue of causation, this court applied the restatement second of torts. In Shy Face, it says when we have issues of causation, we look to the restatement second of torts. The question
has been applied in the alternate cause context, which is what we have here.
That's right. That's why we're here. It has not yet been applied to the government's case in alternate cause. The question is, does it apply? I mean, ultimately, that's the question we have.
Even if it did, he found there's no brain injury. He found that the only thing that caused the injury here was not the vaccine.
No, that in fact is not what he found. He said the ultimate condition, which was their case. They've never argued that the vaccine didn't cause the initial seizure. I mean, is this court going to say that a child having two static...
But that wasn't the injury. The injury is SMEI, which is caused by SCN1A.
SMEI is a description of the ultimate seizure disorder this child has. It's a severe seizure.
Yes.
Okay, so you have, this court cannot say that those seizures were not an injury. I mean, those were that was a terrible injury that that child had after that vaccination. Okay.
But they're not the injury that's the focus of the case.
Really? Are they distinguishable?
That's what the special master seems to have found.
Well, but he didn't. No. That's in fact not what he found.
On his last page, he says that if a similar case were presented, but one that demonstrated evidence of brain injury subsequent to the initial seizure.
Yeah.
Caused by a post-vaccination fever, the undersigned would be inclined to find the vaccine was a substantial contributing factor. But that's not the case here. There's no persuasive evidence that the vaccine was a substantial or but-for cause.
No brain injury. SMEI is the problem. Does
the restatement second of torts apply to the government's case? I mean, that's the first question that this court has to provide all of us below. Okay, we have to have that answer. I think. I mean, obviously, it's up to you to provide that. If the restatement second applies, then you cannot, as a matter of law, defend an injury like this, seizures, by saying that she was going to have seizures anyway. I mean, I think that's absolutely clear in the restatement. It's what Special Master A. Bell found.
If we conclude this restatement doesn't apply, do you lose?
Absolutely. Yeah. And you'll need to explain that in what Shy Face meant, because, of course, in Shy Face it says, on issues of causation, we look to the restatement. But absolutely, we have to have the restatement.
Mr. Gage, let's hear from Ms. Babcock at this point.
Okay, I would like some...
You consumed your time. We'll give you 1 minute. Would you give her an additional 1 minute? Thank you, Ms. Babcock. You may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Chief Judge, I think you framed it well. This is a seizure disorder that has a known genetic cause, SCN1A mutation. This is a child that underwent genetic testing that revealed that she had that genetic mutation, and the special master ultimately credited the testimony from the government expert finding that the genetic mutation was the cause of her seizure.
But that's not the end of the map, right? I mean, if there had been a finding that the initial febrile post-vaccine seizure had contributed in any material way to the ultimate seizure condition, then she would have been entitled to recover. You agree with that?
If there had been a finding of damage, I think certainly you would still need to apply the causation standard here, but for cause and substantial factor.
I'm not sure that there would necessarily have to be even a finding of actual damage as such. In other words, you don't have to prove how you got to the point of additional incremental increase in vulnerability or an acceleration of the time of the onset and so forth. If there were a causal relationship between the first seizure and the ultimate seizure condition of any sort, that would be enough, right?
So I think that is how the Simon and Merzberg cases were ultimately analyzed.
Does the government agree with that?
And in the absence of an alternate cause, if it meets the legal burdens I've set forth...
Well, the ultimate cause is, one arguably, the genetic mutation. But if the febrile seizure, the vaccine, causes some alteration in the course that otherwise would have occurred, then that is enough to trigger the aggravation part of the test, is it not?
I think if it shows an injury and that it shows that the vaccine caused an injury in this case, but that's certainly not what happened here. This was a simple unmasking of a seizure disorder. There was no alteration in this child's clinical course at all. There was testimony from the government expert who is a board certified geneticist and pediatric neurologist. And it's important that this is a genetic mutation and expertise was required here from a genetics expert. Petitioners ultimately elected not to present a geneticist, and so much of that testimony was essentially unrebutted. It's certainly not error for the special master to choose to credit that in this case.
Now, Mr. Gage has told us that it is important to the Vaccine Act program to get a resolution to the question of whether the restatement, in particular the superseding clause provisions of the restatement, apply to the Vaccine Act. What's the government's position on that?
I will note initially that some of the specific provisional arguments were never fleshed out in front of the special master, but we have argued along. We don't think that it's a good application. In reading the briefs, it seems like a sort of tortured analysis, and this is a case where it's a genetic mutation that actually preceded the vaccination. So the child is a spontaneous mutation born at birth. I think some elements of the restatement sort of are better corollaries to the vaccine program than others. I don't think that this element is here. The statute says preponderance of the evidence. It says that we need to show that a factor unrelated was principally responsible. That's precisely what the showing was here. The idea for the restatement came from Special Master Abel's suture case, which Mr. Gage obviously discussed extensively. That's not, as this court has already observed, those are not cases involving the genetic mutation.
But by and large, and I can't vouch for the particular provision that we're discussing here, but by and large, the restatement second is, as the name of the volume indicates, is simply a codification of common law tort principles, which would presumably be applicable in this setting. Wouldn't you agree that normally common law tort principles would apply here?
Certainly, yes, and that's an open question.
So if we were to conclude, for example, that the restatement is not a substantial departure from common law principles and superseding clause, then we would apply that principle, or that principle is embodied in the restatement. Agreed?
I think you could. I think you would still find that the genetic mutation in this case...
Well, maybe so, but Mr. Gage is looking to us first. Well, first he's looking to us to reverse the judgment in favor of his client, but in terms of the needs, broader needs of the program, he's saying we need to get this matter resolved, and I'm just trying to pin down where you are exactly on that.
I don't think we think it applies here. It's never been incorporated by this court in any of the other sections.
No, but you're saying it's something we should speak to precedentially to resolve one way or the other as to whether the superseding provisions of the restatement apply in this setting, namely when the government comes forward to show an alternate cause.
I think that it's our position, and I apologize for if I'm not seeming to be clear on this and muddling about. We don't think it has to be incorporated. We don't think it should apply here.
Are you saying an alternate cause is different than a superseding cause?
I think an alternate cause is what's set forth in the statute. A superseding cause, it's unclear because there's no guidance from the circuit as of yet or as to whether that should even be considered. The statute says that when the burden has shifted to us, that we show by that it is principally responsible for the vaccination. And our burden in doing so is obviously preponderance by the evidence, which is what Mr. Gage...
If I'm hearing you right, you're saying a superseding cause is two causes, one which overrides the other, but they each contribute. And an alternate cause is a cause, and the only cause, and the vaccine was not a cause in this instance. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think a factor unrelated is, as the precedent in these cases has shown, we're establishing that biologically and legally plausible a factor unrelated, the alternate cause, was the cause of the injury here. We think that actually the special master and
was the cause, so the vaccine was not a cause.
I think it's the same standard of but-for cause and substantial factor. It's the same analysis, but when we're dealing with a factor unrelated, by definition, the vaccine has been posited as a potential cause in this case. And so we, by making our showing that the factor unrelated was a but-for cause and a substantial factor, necessarily eliminate the vaccine as a but-for cause and a substantial factor. It's important to note there never was that explicit finding in the case. In fact, the special master specifically found that the DTaP vaccine was not a but-for cause or a substantial factor. That's on Joint Appendix 51.
Let me see if I understand what the government's position is exactly as to the second element of the Alton standard. I think I understand the first element, and I'm pretty sure I understand the third element, but the second I find a little bit, at least potentially, ambiguous as to whether what's required. Well, I'll just read the language. A logical sequence of cause and effect showing that the vaccination was the reason for the injury. Now, is it the government's position that that means what needs to be shown is just that there is a logical sequence of cause and effect that could indicate causation, or that that actually requires proof of actual causation by a preponderance?
I think the latter. I think you need to show that the vaccination was the reason for the injury.
It's a little unclear to me, since that's the ultimate question in an off-table case of predominance causation, then what the other two elements of Olson are doing. If the second element requires you to prove causation by a preponderance,
Certainly the timing is also an important factor.
Well, if the second requires you to prove actual causation, why does it matter when the timing is? You're already required to prove causation. You settle the second, you're done. Right?
Well, I think in some instances, some injuries may be more known to potentially be associated, but then timing becomes a critical factor. And sometimes, depending upon the onset time, that may eliminate prong two. If you can't establish prong three, you can't get to prong two.
Well, let me then come back to an argument that I think Mr. Gage was making, and I may have interrupted him as he was making, but I think I understood the argument he was making. Is the special master here found that Olson test is satisfied? Right?
The special master stopped short of making that finding. And in doing so, he sort of acknowledged that there's a little bit of inconsistency between Walther and Doe 11 as to when a potential factor unrelated should be considered. Part of it, I think, was in this case, was the procedural posture, and that the fact of the genetic mutation did not come up until very late. There had already been actually one expert hearing on the case.
Well, let me then jump over that question and then ask, if there is a case, and whether this case is it or not, in which the special master finds that the Olson factors were satisfied, given your definition of Olson, which is it requires proof of actual causation of the ultimate condition that we're concerned about, then how can there be a truly superseding cause if the special master found that the initial seizure was an actual cause of the ultimate condition?
And I think perhaps your question highlights a potential problem with the application of the restatement in this context. Moreover, an analysis in a case such as this one essentially requires the special master to put blinders on as to the genetic mutation to even make the finding that the burden shifted. He sort of tried to do that there, but then ultimately stopped short. And I think that's why he stopped short, because you have the genetic mutation, which is the sole cause here. It's sometimes a difficult analysis, and I think he struggled, and I think you'll find in the next case that analysis was much more, he considered the evidence of the genetic mutation much more clearly in petitioner's prima facie case. And I think that this type of situation highlights why the special master can and should, in situations like this. You really can't analyze whether a vaccine, if there's a genetic mutation out there, which is the sole cause, you really can't analyze the question of causation in the absence of that. It has to come in to the overall question of whether petitioners can establish their burden in the case. I think it's important to note, again, this case wasn't a close one. Some of these are very close questions. This really, there was a finding, and there was extensive testimony, extensive medical literature that supported that the genetic mutation was the cause. This is a child, unfortunately, where the die was cast at birth sometime in her first year of life. Something was going to unmask the seizure disorder, and it's certainly a tragic case, but it's not a case where vaccine played any substantial role.
Something was going to unmask the seizure disorder. If the febrile seizure had unmasked the seizure disorder, then you would concede liability, right?
Not if in an instance like this, it didn't cause any damage. No, there's no evidence of neurologic damage in this case.
The damage was that it triggered that which maybe ultimately would have occurred. But I didn't understand your position to be simply a trigger is not enough. to constitute causation for purposes of the act.
I think petitioners argue that a trigger is always a but-for cause and a substantial factor, and I think we very much disagree with that. I think if you look at this case, it may have been because the fever, the initial fever, was the trigger. It may have been a but-for cause, but it is not a substantial factor in this case. The genetic mutation is what caused the seizure disorder. And I think the special master, in analyzing, looked for evidence of neurologic damage after these initial seizure events, and the facts did not show any.
Are you saying to us the vaccine may have caused a seizure? It did not cause the seizure disorder. It did not cause the condition, because that condition was programmed into every cell of her body.
Absolutely. Much more cogently stated. I appreciate it. Yes, that's precisely what we're saying, that the vaccine played no role here. And that is the testimony from the government
but
expert.
Played no role is a lot more than what you said in response to my question. If there's a trigger, that's a role. Now, it may be a role that something at some point in the child's life was going to be played by something. But it just so happens that it was the vaccine that played that role. I understand that's not necessarily this case, but what I'm asking about is what about a case in which you have a specific finding by the special master that yes, that feeble seizure triggered this condition. Are you saying that in that situation there would be no liability, no compensation?
I think it's a different question, and perhaps I misstated. I should have said didn't alter the clinical course. This is the testimony and the evidence. There's no evidence of damage. If there's evidence of damage, and the special master said as much, that would meet the burden for causation. Certainly there's room for that in the vaccine program.
Would altering the clinical course include earlier onset?
I think, not the question presented in this case. I think it I would reserve that would be a question best left to experts and geneticists and neurologists. Certainly the testimony in this case that the special master accepted found that the vaccine was not, it was the genetic mutation that was the cause. If there are no further questions.
Thank you, Ms. Babcock. Mr. Gates, you have a minute.
Everybody admitted that the vaccine triggered the onset of the seizure. The initial seizure...
A seizure. Did it alter every cell in her body, which is the condition, which is you're seeking compensation for?
No, I'm seeking compensation for her seizures. And no, it can't...
Her seizure or her seizures? The seizures are caused by a condition in her cells.
No, a vaccine cannot alter the genetic makeup of their cells. Absolutely cannot. Everybody conceded in this case that the onset of the initial seizure of this seizure disorder was a result of a vaccine injury.
Well, they said they conceded the vaccine caused the initial seizure. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there was a concession that it caused a seizure disorder if you're defining that to mean the SMEI. I think there was that distinction there.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't in the... that distinction was not in our trial. I mean, what you're saying is at some point on that timeline, the government's expert said, oh, the initial damage from these terribly severe vaccine-caused seizures stopped. And then the SMEI started with some other event down the road. Yeah, that's a fiction. Never happened.
I assume we wouldn't be here today if SMEI had never developed. Assume all we'd had were the post-vaccination seizures in August and September, August of 2001. There wouldn't be a case here, would there?
Well, theoretically there could be, but to answer your question, no. You wouldn't have satisfied the 6-month rule, which is part of what we satisfied. But read the statute, subsection 13A. It says, to have a factor unrelated defense, that defense has to have no known relation, relations in there. It's in there twice, actually. No known relation and is not related to subsection 13A 1 and 2 for the government's case to the injury.
Which is exactly what the government expert testified, is that the disorder was not altered in any way by the vaccine.
Right. So a seizure is not related to a seizure disorder.
That's what he said.
Right. Well, and the question is, legally, can you make that defense?
That's a factual question.
Oh, no, that is a legal question, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gage.